Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Joining me in the studio today is a very nervous Carly Madi.
Hello.
You are the life and soul of this radio station since you walked in. You're the brightest button I've ever come across in my life. Life seems to be fun for you, but you're 25 years of age and you've been given a diagnosis of a very rare form of breast cancer. And this is why you're here today, because so many young people, particularly young girls, obviously, around the country are thinking, this is something that will never affect me. Like cervical cancer. You don't think at 24 or 23 cervical cancer is ever going to affect you. You think of older women and you think of women in their middle ages. When you were, before you were diagnosed, did the thoughts of breast cancer ever come into your head?
The thoughts of breast cancer, it was never a thing in my mind.
Never?
Like, it was never something.
Did you even check? Like, you know the way you're supposed to check and do all the bits and pieces? You know, every day you get up and have a quick feel. And did you even do any of that?
Never. Absolutely not. It was only when a girl in school, an older girl than me in school, was saying that she had a pain in her chest and she was worried about it. And I was like, why are you worried about it? And she was like, Carly, because breast cancer. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, we weren't educated on this in school. Nobody sat us down and said, oh, listen, if there's any pains in your chest, if you notice any lumps, anything like that, we were never told, like, oh, it could be breast cancer. Never, ever. Mm-hmm. It was just something that was never brought up. Like,
yeah, and what was the first sign for you? I mean, were you ill beforehand? Did you notice that you were becoming tired? Or what was the first signs that you thought, oh, something's wrong?
The first signs were, I got a pain in my chest about a year and a half ago. I had noticed it started coming up.
Was it pain or an uncomfortableness?
A shooting pain.
Okay,
like
right, okay.
If somebody gave me a cuddle, or if somebody was sitting too close to me and like leaned over on me, like I'd jump. It was like a jolt of pain up me chest.
Right, okay.
And I knew that something wasn't right then, but I ignored it for a very long time. I just kept on pushing it off, and if someone went to squeeze me, I'd just kind of pull away, like, because I knew it was going
to
happen.
And did you even go to the doctor, or were you being the Billy Big, you know what, and saying, ah, I'm grand,
I'm grand. That one on the backbone, I just like, no, I'm grand.
It'll go away itself.
Yeah, no, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
Like, so you just assumed it was muscular or something like that?
I didn't even assume that.
Why waste 50 quid on a doctor?
Get me? I've better things to be buying. So I just didn't bother.
Because, of course, I mean, some people have referred to you as an influencer. You don't like that title yourself because you don't believe you're an influencer. You have a lot of followers on Instagram and you have this wonderful as you call them, your ginger locks.
Yeah.
So you would have been, are you a self-conscious person? Would you have been very self-conscious?
Would I have been
image-wise?
Back then?
Yeah.
Yeah, more so than now.
Do you look back at that and regret that? I was an idiot.
Why didn't I? Like, I look back at pictures of myself now and I'm like, oh my God, you were lovely. Like, why didn't you like?
I did see pictures of you. You were lovely.
Ah, thanks very much. No, but I genuinely look back now and I'm like, you were so cute and you had your little hair and you have, like, you're you. Like, you.
And all these people loved you and they loved you for what you were, but they loved you, I think, more so for your sense of humour, probably.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I don't think anybody would have ever been drawn to me over how I looked, not in the slightest. I think that if anybody has ever drawn to me, it's over how I am as a person. Like, that I'd be quite bubbly and quite, like, I'm a messer. Do you know that way?
Yeah.
And I think that people are kind of drawn to people like that. And, well, I hope that's why people like me.
So the pain, did it get worse?
Yeah.
Okay, when was that, roughly what age were you there when that pain got started and got worse?
That pain started, I would have been coming to the end of 23.
Yeah.
I would have been coming to, and then obviously as time went on it worsened, but like that again.
Did breast cancer ever enter your head?
No.
Did any kind of serious, you didn't even think to yourself this could be a serious illness?
I was just like, I have a lump and I think it's a cyst, and I never even
thought. Did you find the lump yourself? Did you feel it?
Yeah.
You found the lump?
Yeah, I found the lump. But it was like, then over time went on, it kind of started to go from one singular lump into like a cluster.
Okay.
It was all kind of joined, and then it was coming to the point where the side of my chest was like stiff, like it was hard.
Okay, all right, okay.
And I was like, no, this definitely isn't normal.
At that point, you didn't. You know, I need to go and see somebody about this.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went to your own doctor, I'm assuming, first.
I went to my GP first.
Yeah.
She had done a general check of me, and she was like, oh no, I think that's fibroadenomas. They're like dead cysts. They're not.
Yeah, fibroids.
About.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So she thought that was what they were, and she was like, look, we'll send you.
Because like you, she's thinking 23 years of age, this is probably not breast cancer.
Why would this be a thing? Do you know that way? Now, I went when I was, the first time I went to my GP, I was 24, and she sent me on to the breast clinic just to reassure me, as you do, like just to say, look, you're all right, we'll see what the story is. Went into the specialist in the breast clinic, he had a fail, the general check as well.
Yeah.
No, I think you're fine. Like, Carly, you're walking out here today and you're not on the top of my worry list. And I was like, all right, fair enough. Like,
and were you worried at that stage? Were you starting to get a bit panicky or jittery? Did you start thinking to yourself the worst? You know, when you start, when you get a pain, you start thinking, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that I'm a bit like that. I get paranoid. Pain, that must be me liver. I'm going to die.
And then you start Googling and all the whole lot. That's something I didn't do.
No, don't ever Google anything.
No, don't, because you'll literally be told you're going to pass here and then. So yeah. I didn't bother Googling that. But even after he checked me chest, the specialist checked me chest, I was like, listen, I don't know. Like, he was like, right, well then we'll send you for an ultrasound just to reassure you again.
Right, okay.
So I went for the ultrasound, and during the ultrasound I could just hear a man on the monitor being like, and I was like, oh, what was, why are you now? And he was like, we need to get Carly a biopsy, like, now. And I was like, what?
Oh,
what in God's name is a biopsy?
So you knew something serious was going on.
Yeah, I knew that something was happening, because his face dropped when we were looking at the monitor, and I could notice there was like this little orb kind of thing.
Right,
and
okay.
It looked different to the whole rest of it. And I was like, oh, okay. Right. So you got the biopsy done. Then I was waiting for, I think it was about a week and a half for the result back off that.
I thought it was like waiting for your leaving cert results, was it?
Do you know what? It was, the lump so much wasn't frightening me, because at that time they weren't expressing any concern for me. They have to say to keep it under wraps.
It was just, let's just check it just to be sure.
They don't ever want to frighten you. Do you know that way? So they were like, oh no, it's fine, we're just going to send it off and la la la. So they sent it off and it came back, and it turns out that it was just a lump. That we don't think it's that serious, but it was 3.4 centimetres and a lump has to be removed when it's 4 centimetres anyway. So they said, look, we're going to take it out, because there's no point in leaving it there.
Yeah.
So that was when I had the lumpectomy. That was on the 30th of August. And I was supposed
to... Was that a painful surgery or...?
Not more niggly than that. And I had to get a wire put into my chest beforehand so they could pinpoint where the cyst was when they went in surgically. So that was uncomfortable. But that, like, the recovery after, there was no
time. Okay, so it was kind of keyhole surgery.
Yeah, it was a small one. So that was the 30th of August. And then they were to ring me a week later with the results. So they rang us and they were like, oh, we haven't got the results back yet. And we were like, okay, no problem. They'll ring us back next week. Rang back the next week. We haven't got the results yet. And then I was like, no.
You start panicking. There's something wrong.
Yeah, something's going on.
They're
here,
getting second opinions on this.
This is the thing. I mean, Ma was like, no, they're just double checking. I goes, but Ma, they knew straight away all the other times. I was like, I think it's a bit... Now, I said the first week, fair enough, they didn't know, but this is week two. So then it went on, week three, look, we don't have the results back. It's not happening. So me and my mum had went on holidays then, and she got a phone call.
What was that holiday like? Were you thinking about this now all the time? Or were you able to put it out of your mind a bit?
Not really, because I had the lumpectomy, so it was kind of a conscious thing. I couldn't get in the pool and stuff because it was, my chest was wrapped. So it was a thing that I was thinking about, because every time my mum was like, you can't do that. Because I had the wrapping on, so it was in my head, like it was something that I was thinking about. And she had come up from the pool one day and she was like, they're after ringing me. So I knew something was wrong when they didn't directly contact me, because obviously they didn't want to frighten me, so they rang my mum instead.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just like, look, we're after sending the biopsy off for specialised testing. Oh, sorry, not the biopsy, the lump for specialised testing in James's, because we think there's something iffy with it, there's something
we need to investigate it. Yeah.
And then that was when they called us in for to come in on the 1st of October, so they could speak to us. And then that was when,
so you're brought into the room, as they say.
Yeah.
What was that moment like when you walked into that room? And okay, you knew you weren't going to get good news, probably.
Yeah,
that was in your head anyway.
Absolutely.
All right.
See, I had accepted. I had told me, man, now I know I have breast cancer. This is when they rang us to come in for the results. She was like, no, you don't. They're going to bring us in and say that they just...
Because normally, if there's nothing wrong, they'll tell you over the phone.
This is the thing. Yeah. But I just kept on saying, no,
and I don't want to frighten
in.
People out there, but like, she's been called in by a doctor recently. But normally, if there's nothing wrong, when you ring your GP, the same thing. If there's nothing wrong, they just tell you over the phone.
They can give you a little wave and be like, ah, look, you're all right.
Yeah.
But this was, I know we need you to come in and speak. So I said to my master straight away, I have a strong feeling that I have breast cancer. Like, I said it about... After the second week, after they rang the second week and told us that the results weren't coming back, I was like, Ma, look, I think it's breast cancer. Like,
you sat down with your Ma.
Yeah.
And she was in the room with you.
Yeah.
And the doctor was a male or female?
Male. Oh, okay. Amazing. He's a phenomenal surgeon. Oh, he's just fantastic. But he's like that. He's quite empathetic, where a lot of surgeons wouldn't be. They wouldn't tie any sort of, like, they wouldn't feel sympathy towards it in any way. They're very blunt and straight in their ways, but they have to be in their line of work. Like, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But
how blunt was he? What did he say to you?
He wasn't at all. Like, we walked in and I knew, but my ears were ringing.
Right.
At that stage, I was like, no, I don't want to hear what he has to say. And we sat down in front of him and he just pushed a little file across the table to me and he was like, Carly, I'm so sorry. And I was like, oh God. I looked at my mammy and I was like, what do you mean you're sorry? And he opened the file and he was like, circling stuff, and I looked at the bottom of it and I was like, I've breast cancer. And he was like,
now to explain to people, this is an extremely rare form of breast cancer that you have.
Extremely rare.
There's only two other cases that we know of.
Two other cases that my oncologist is looking at, and it's one in Italy and one in Japan.
Okay. And what is the name of it? Is there a name on it?
Yeah, secretory carcinoma, it's called. It's actually, it was first of all called a children's cancer. Like, it was found in, like, prematurely, it was found in younger people. Mm-hmm. And then obviously it's progressed, but I'm quite young for this cancer to be in me, so it's still kind of that, you know, that way.
Yeah, but it is still breast cancer anyway. And in relation to how you got this, or did the doctor have a conversation about, you know, how you ended up with it? I mean, did they say it's obviously genetic, or is it lifestyle, or is it something you've eaten, or something you've taken, or something you're doing, or is it? Did they give you a reason why? Because everybody wants a reason, don't they? They want to know, oh, how did this happen to me?
Absolutely, you want to know exactly what you've done for this to happen to you, or have you made it happen, or is it just like a genetic thing? There's no explanation for it. My
just
body
one of those
has
things.
Just created this thing on its own, and there's no explanation for it. It's not diet related. It's not hormone related. This has just found itself in my body, and that's it. There's not enough research done on it. We've no research to go off. So they're looking at the case files from different, like, cases.
Countries,
that's it. That's all we have to go off. So we're all spitballing. We don't know what this is or why it happened.
And was that like a dream to you? When you walked out of that room that day and you were going home with your mum in the car or the bus or whatever?
My mum drove me home. I go, oh, I wouldn't be getting on the bus after that. Any nerves?
So you went home in the car that day, right, with your mum. Were you like just staring out the window in a trance, or were you all talk about it, or was your mum, don't worry, Carly, it'll be grand, we'll sort it out? I mean, because that's what mums say anyway, that's what they always say, right?
Yeah.
But was it like a dream? Was that like a dream going home that day?
Yeah, it was very silent. There wasn't a lot to be said between the two of us, to be fair. Like, it was just kind of...
What can you say?
Me poor ma. No, me poor ma. Like, I honestly took it very well. Like, I cried for approximately a minute, if even. Like, it was just real. I had a little whinge, and then I was like, right, what have we got to do? Whereas me ma's poor face was waxed. Like, I could tell by looking at her that she was just in a different
world.
You're
a baby, that's why.
Yeah, well, I'm the youngest. There's two of us, and I'm the youngest now. I'm 25, but still.
You're still our baby.
Our baby, do you know that way? So she was in an absolute heap. God love her. And my heart broke because I was looking at her.
You're more worried about her.
Oh, absolutely wasn't thinking about me. And my poor brother then was in work when I got diagnosed, when he had told me. So my mum had to contact me brother. And he's a very emotional being. God love him like that. Males never usually admit to emotions or anything like that. Mm-hmm. My brother's not like that. He'd be a very proud person, and he'd have no problem admitting when he was feeling bad. And God love him, it just broke him. Do you know that way? Like, he didn't find it easy to cope with himself. So I was just thinking.
Well, it's not easy to cope with news like that. That's devastating like that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about the prognosis, because let's be positive about this for the future for you.
Yeah.
But what's it been like? Obviously, you're going through chemotherapy at the moment.
Yeah, I'm going through chemo. I got my first chemo on the 19th of December.
Okay.
It actually went really well. You're supposed to get all these mental side effects. Now, they do warn you of everything, just so you're on the ball. And if it does happen, you know. But the only side effect that I got from it was fatigue. Like, that was a major side effect that I got. And I think one of the days I felt a little bit swollen, like my hands felt a little bit swollen one of the days. But that was genuinely it, which I'm so lucky. I wasn't like nauseous. I wasn't getting sick. I was fine. Like, but then on the 2nd of January, I felt sick. I woke up really, really ill. And we had to go to the hospital. You have to go through the A&E, unfortunately, oncology patients.
Yeah.
You have to go through the A&E regardless of the situation. So I had to go into the A&E, and it turns out that my neutrophils are rock bottom. The white blood cells just weren't there. Yeah. And if I had gotten a sickness or an infection, that would have been extremely dangerous
course,
to my
yeah.
body at that stage.
Particularly this time of the year, where there's so many flus and coughs
and
colds
going
on.
There's measles, mumps, there's lots going around.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it was quite dangerous. And that dose going around as well was shocking. So,
are you conscious of that? Are you like, do you feel like the boy in the bubble, so to speak?
I feel like I should have been more conscious. I feel like I should have been the boy in the bubble, because I was floating around and I was like, I'm fine, because I didn't feel ill.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm grand, nothing's going to happen to me. Like, and even my mum said that we were quite naive to the whole sickness thing, and we didn't really think too much into it. But now, like that, if anybody is coughing or sneezing or anything, there's a mask going on you when you come into the house. Like, sorry about it, but you just can't be there.
Should I be wearing a mask here?
No, not at all. Come here, if it would have been me otherwise. But no, we're just so much more conscious about where I go, and I won't go to built up places.
Yeah, so you stay away from crowds, essentially.
This is it, basically, because I can't afford to get sick. They won't do me next chemo, so.
Okay. So, and generally, how's things going? Have you spoke to your doctor since? You obviously have.
Yeah.
On many occasions.
Yeah.
And how does he think it's going? Is he positive?
I actually have a female oncologist.
Okay.
And she had visited me. I was in the hospital for 10 days after my neutrophils went down. I just wasn't getting better quick enough. So my chemotherapy was to be this Thursday, and it was cancelled. It was supposed to be today. And then it's going on next week. So we were talking about changing my chemo, because it's quite strong. I shouldn't have gotten as sick as I did. So I'm not sure if we're going ahead with the change next week, but we will alter it to suit me. And
yeah, see, you're a very positive person. I expected when, you know, when we talk about somebody who's been diagnosed with cancer, going through chemotherapy, you expect to see somebody coming in who's I'm not saying feeling sorry for themselves.
Oh, no, you can't say that, because that a lot of the time that is what it is.
No, because that sounds really bad. But because, of course, we should feel sorry for people and have empathy for people and understanding when they're in a bad situation. But somebody who was really unwell looking, but you're as bright as a bubble. And you have a very positive outlook on this whole thing. And this is the reason, of course, that you wanted to talk to the media. And I know you've been on TV and everything. What was it like being on television before?
Fantastic.
Were you mad excited?
My ears were gone. I was rattling I was. So, no, it went really well. Like, Alan and Karen really, really calmed me down before I went on. Like, that is
Alan Costner and Alan Cantwell.
Alan Hughes. Alan Hughes. Two of them are phenomenal. Okay. They're great. But they sat down with me beforehand and they were like, just be yourself. Like, stop being so shaky.
Well, I don't think you'd have to tell you that. You know what I mean? Because I normally would talk to people before they came in here, but I knew immediately when I offered you a bowl of porridge earlier on that you were grand.
The excitement.
Yeah, good radio station, they offered me a bowl of porridge and a cup of coffee.
Come here, I was delighted with myself. I'll take what I'm given.
But in saying that, I mean, you wanted to talk about it because it's something that we don't think about, and that young girls and the girls in the office were talking about it this morning when they were talking about you coming in. That say, at Lena's age, she's 29. She came if I forgot her age. 28, there you go. She's 28 years of age. I'm sure Helena doesn't think of breast cancer. I'm sure, well, maybe she does actually, because she got a bit of a scare about 2 years ago after she got a smear, but everything thankfully is okay now. But she did get a bit of a scare. So maybe that kind of does make her think a bit more about it. But young girls think, that's not for me. That's for older women. I shouldn't be checking my breasts. There's no need for me to be to do it. And it's quite easy to do. Is it something that we should be teaching young girls in school?
Oh my God, absolutely. Like, that should be in, like, that sex education when you get it in school. We learn nothing about that, even as far as the female anatomy. It's almost like they're afraid to teach it. It is. I know it's a touchy subject.
It's all right to touch it, like.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to touch a boob.
You have to know your body. Yeah. And you do. That is one thing that they have to teach young girls, is that you have to kind of, I know it's a bit much, but you have to explore yourself and know you're normal and know what is
what
right
feels
and wrong.
Abnormal. Yeah. So if something feels different, that you can do something about it.
Absolutely.
But in saying that, Carly, you felt something different and you ignored it. Yeah, because of your age, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just because we don't expect to hear it.
Yeah, see, I didn't even know what I was looking at like that when the girl in school, her name was Shelley, she was a doll, but she was older than me in school. And when she had said that to me, I'd never even thought about that before. And like that, you start to get your girls, they come on you, and then obviously your chest changes, and different times of the month, you are going to feel different. Mm-hmm. So it's all just like that learning about yourself and how you're going to be. So I didn't think about that before until Shelley had brought that up to me, that she was getting the pains and it might be breast cancer. That was the first time that I had ever even known anything about that.
Yeah, that was just something that happened to somebody else.
Yeah.
But most illnesses, we feel like that. We always, when we hear of people with illnesses, we always think that's something that happens to somebody else until it happens to ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's really the hard part. So what we need to do is educate people, particularly young girls. I mean, and look, we've had a lot of exposure with cervical cancer recently, of course, because of a lot of the scandal that happened. And, you know, I think girls are very conscious of it now, even though the test may not be as reliable as they should be. The girls are very conscious about going for a smear test. It's just vital that you do it. And we did, actually, we had a young girl in the studio here going back about 2 years ago who was 23, I think, and she had cervical cancer, which, again, was very, very young. It's extremely rare.
Yeah.
But the point is, it can happen.
Absolutely, you're open to anything. This is the thing. That's why they need to lower the ages on both the smears and the breast screenings.
Okay, so the screening at the moment is 50 years of age.
50 years of age.
So if you're a girl of 35 or 25 or 40 and you feel a lump or you're a bit suspicious about something, you can't get a free screening.
No, you can't. Absolutely not. Like, you'll be charged through the hilt a lot of the time.
Oh, you don't even have to feel anything, by the way. It's a good idea just to go for a screening every now and again,
Just to check up on yourself and keep up with yourself. Like that, when I turned 25, I went straight away from my smear. But the only thing is, I probably wouldn't have until this happened to me, because I'd just be dumbfounded by anything happening to me so young. So when I got the breast cancer, that was when I turned 25. Then on the 18th of October, I said, I'm going straight for that smear, because I need
because
to know
you're
what's
conscious
right
of
my
that
body.
So,
I'm conscious of all of it now. Like, if I feel like I need to go to the doctor now, like, I won't put it off. If I feel sick, I'm going
to
the doctor.
I used to put it off. I'm not as bad as I used to be.
Yeah.
But I was one of those people who got that's a bit of a pain there. I shouldn't really have that.
Yeah.
I'd be grand. I'll leave it for 2 weeks and see what happens.
Do you get me? Because obviously you have your own life. You have your own stuff to do. Going to the doctor is probably a bit of a pain for you time-wise. And then a lot of the time in Ireland at the minute, money-wise, it's going to be a problem for
money.
People. Yeah. So people are just like, no, I don't need to go. It's only this. But You don't know.
Like, yeah, and I know for a woman who wants to go for a screening who doesn't come into the criteria of being under the age of 50, mm-hmm. you have to pay you then. If you want to go, well, you'll wait 3 or 4 months to go to a hospital.
Yep.
Or if you want to go privately, if you're a bit worried about something that you felt, you want to go privately, you'll pay probably 250, 300 for a consultant.
Yeah, through the hundreds.
And then you'll obviously pay for the thing, unless you've some sort of health insurance, you're going to pay for the screening itself. So it could cost you $1,000.
Yeah. Easy, you know, easy money.
Just for a diagnosis to stop you costing the state more money in the future.
That's the thing.
Which is essentially what it's about. So,
it would benefit them in the long run.
Of course
taking the ages down. I don't see why they wouldn't want to do it. Like that they say early.
There's a cost factor to it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I think we would recoup the cost in the amount of lives that we'd save and the amount of, I suppose, necessary surgery we might have to do in the future.
Yeah. This is the thing. Like, the hospitals are packed out as it is. You could just take the trouble off if you brought it down. And like that early detection, this is on the Breast Check website. Early detection will give you a better chance at solving it.
Yeah.
So how is early detection at 50 years of age when the average life expectancy of a woman in Ireland is 81 years of age? How is 50 early? That's what I want to know. It's more than half of your life.
Of course, yeah, you're nearly 2/3 into your life. Yeah.
How is that early?
Yeah, no, it's not. And I know they're basing this on the risk factor. The majority of women who do get breast cancer are usually over the age of 50, so they are basing it on risk factor. But it does come down to money.
Yeah.
That they need to extend this particular age limit right down. What age would you have it at?
Sorry?
What age would you put it to? 18?
I'd like that. I'd like 18 to 20. That would be ideal compared to what it is now.
I know the argument for the smear under the age of 25 is that women's cervical cells change.
But they change anyway.
Yeah.
They continue to change all the time. So I don't see why that'd be a factor.
Yeah.
I think it's a silly excuse of a thing. Like, we're constantly changing. Our bodies are constantly changing. So I don't see why
We couldn't start. Now is the right time to be talking about this. We have an election coming up.
This is the thing.
There's candidates out there looking for votes.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, obviously, the cervical cancer is certainly going to be on the cards for this election because of what happened over the last government, which are still there, by the way, but at the moment. But this is something else that we should absolutely be talking about because this could turn into another scandal in 10 years' time.
This is the thing. The women are getting younger and younger. The more women I meet now going through this journey myself, like, they're all under 50. I think I've met about 2 women over 50 that were diagnosed with breast cancer. The rest of them are under.
Yeah.
So I just can't. I'm baffled by the fact that it's not even put out as an issue. Like, it's not brought up in schools that it could be a possibility. It's not brought up when you go to your doctor's office, make sure you check your chest. Nobody tells anybody under 50 to bother.
No.
It's literally alien to people under 50 because the health service just doesn't put it out there as a thing. It's not a lesson that young girls need to know.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's just, it's frightening.
Okay, well, look, so education is the key. In schools, young girls should be taught how to check their breasts as well, apart from anything else. And over 18, they should be able to get a free screening if they want to.
Yeah.
Obviously not every week, but they should
But
they should be entitled to a free screening once every so many years or whatever it happens to be. And the same will go for cervical checks as well. You believe it should be under 25. I think it's something that the government should certainly look at. I don't believe it would be a waste of taxpayers' money. I think it would be essential. And apart from anything else, money shouldn't matter when we're talking about the health of women, in particular when we're talking about this particular issue. And we could talk about prostate cancer for men as well.
Yeah.
In relation to that, that certainly should be something as well that we should be talking about in the future. But how are you feeling now? What's your headspace like?
Headspace is good. The headspace is actually the best it's been in donkey's years. I have to say, like that, I suffered with mental health in the time I was 16 and I would have really struggling with my thoughts and trying to get my head together and stuff. And since I've been diagnosed, it's like everything's
Are you appreciating life more?
Oh,
is that what it is?
Oh my God, I'm appreciating absolutely everything. I am. I'm appreciating everything because what I've had in front of me the whole time is what I should have been appreciating. Like I was saying earlier on, like, I used to cry if I was going on a night out and my makeup didn't turn out right.
Whereas now those things are just not important.
Well, I'm lucky to get to go on the night out. Do you get me? Like, I don't see why I didn't look at things that way now. And like that, I have
that's
family.
That's a great analogy, by the way, to give that. And for a lot of young girls and guys, by the way, if you're going out, worrying about what you look like, worrying about how you feel when you go out, when there's so many people in this world who you have other things to worry about, which are more important.
You get to go. Do you know what I like that? I have a roof over my head. I have food to eat. I have a family. Like, a lot of people, you have more than the majority of this world has. So you just need to, like that, go back to basics, start off from the start and think about all the little things that you have. And by the time like that you're done looking down a list of things that you do have, you're going to be so grateful by the end of it. If you just stop yourself for a minute.
How's your mum, by the way? How's she now?
Meet mammy.
Is she all right?
She'll never tell you if she is or isn't, you know, that way. Like,
is she listening now?
I'd like to hope she is. I'd like to hope so. I think she's actually out there.
Is she? Oh, is she out there?
I think so, yeah.
All right, okay.
But no, I'd like to think she's doing okay. Like, she's a very strong woman.
Yeah.
I think that's where I've gotten it from now. Whereas I would have been a whinger for a while and used to wind me mouth because she doesn't do crying. Brian's not done in my house.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, she's quite a strong woman. So I think, especially now with how I'm feeling, she's so proud because I went from being this broken, sad little person that would have crying literally every day for a very long time. I was just so hurt. And I think she's just delighted now that things are after doing a 360 and kind of getting horse strength now. So,
well, look, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. I hope,
and you will be in here talking to us again next year.
Absolutely.
And are you going to continue this campaign? Is this something that you want to campaign for?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we're on to about 13,500, 14,000 signatures at the minute.
Where can people sign that petition?
People can sign that. It's Carly Mahady on Instagram. The link is in my bio. And then if you go onto my Facebook, it's just Carly Mahady. You can go onto the link there and sign the petition. A lot of people have shared it. It's everywhere. You can actually go onto change.org. And you can see.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I get Helena to put a link. If you go to the Niall Boylan Show, either the Twitter account or the Facebook account, we will put the link up there.
Amazing.
Yeah, and you can link straight to it from there, all right?
Thank you.
If anybody doesn't remember all of that. Carla Mahady, it's been absolutely wonderful talking. You're actually very inspirational, by the way. I know you don't know that, but you're a hugely inspirational person because you're so positive about somebody that something that could get so many people down. You're really, really positive about it. And I wish you the best of luck. I really do.
Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Carly. After the break, by the way, I do want to be asking you, by the way, should we abandon the rules for school children, by the way? Should we abandon the rules? By the way, what do you think of that? School children.
Should they have to wear uniforms?
What about earrings, piercings, tattoos, dyeing their hair, long hair, short hair, long hair for boys? Should we abandon all those old rules for school?
I do think there has to be certain rules in place, but I think you should let kids be who they're going to be. Like that, I think if you kind of fight kids on what they want to do, you're just going
to... So if Mary wants to go in with pink hair and a nose ring and, you know, and dress like a goth,
I don't see what difference it makes to other people's education. I know they say it distracts kids, but everything distracts kids.
That was the reason it was brought in. It was to try and reduce bullying so every kid looked the same.
Yeah.
That was the reason.
It hasn't stopped bullying though, has it?
No, it really hasn't. You're right. thanks, Carly. Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.